about a thing back home. Larry has it under control. And as for the costumes, you have bigger things in that beautiful head of yours. Just let me feel useful and remember the little ones. So many scans. CT, PET. The letters ran amuck in my head while she was in surgery. They called it minor. The tumor they found on her left adrenal gland and kidney was anything but. Another conference room, but I wasn't sitting down. I was taking whatever news they had for me standing up, period. Miss Mackenzie, Dr. Hughes addressed me as she walked in with a team of doctors. I was grateful for whatever arrangement she had with Montrose that allowed her to be here, to have the same face, the same voice with me. Well?
We performed the biopsy and tested both the tumor and the bone marrow.
Okay. My arms were crossed tightly, doing their best to hold the rest of me together.
I'm so sorry, but your daughter's case is very aggressive and advanced. In most neuroblastoma cases, the symptoms present much sooner than this. But Maisie's condition has been progressing without any outward signs. It's likely been advancing undetected for years.
Years? A monster had been growing inside my child for years. What are you trying to tell me?
Dr. Hughes walked around the table to take my hand where I stood rocking back and forth like the twins were still babies and my arms in need of soothing. Maisie has stage 4 neuroblastoma. It's taken over 90% of her bone marrow. I kept my eyes locked on her dark brown ones, knowing the moment I lost that contact, I'd be drowning again. Already the walls felt like they were closing in, the other doctors fading from my peripheral vision.
90%?
My voice was barely a whisper. I'm afraid so. I swallowed and focused on bringing air in and out of my lungs, trying to find the courage to ask the obvious question. The one I couldn't force past my lips. Because the minute it came out and she answered, everything would change.
Ella? Dr. Hughes prompted.
What's her outlook? Her prognosis? What do we do?
We attack it immediately and without mercy. We start with chemo and we move forward. We fight. She fights. And when she's too tired to fight, then you do what you can to fight for her. Because this is an all-out war.
What are her chances?
Ella, I'm not sure you want-
What are her chances?
I shouted with the last of my energy.
Dr. Hughes paused, then squeezed my hand.
She has a 10% chance of surviving.
That roaring returned to my ears. But I shoved it away, concentrating on every word Dr. Hughes said. I needed every ounce of information.
She has a 10% chance of surviving this?
I echoed, needing her to tell me that I'd heard wrong.
No. She has a 10% chance of surviving the year.
My knees gave out as my back hit the wall. I slid, paper crumpling behind me as my weight took down whatever had been there. I landed on the floor, unable to do anything but breathe. Voices spoke, and I heard but didn't understand what they said. In my mind, they repeated one thing over and over. 10% chance. My daughter had a 10% chance of living through this year. Which meant she had a 90% chance of dying. Of those angel wings she refused to take off becoming very real.
Focus on the 10.
10 was better than 9.
10 was everything.
I pulled myself together. Chemo, PICCLINE.
Appointments in Montrose and Denver.
Aggressive cancer meant an aggressive plan. Binders full of information, notebooks with scribbles.
Planners and apps and research studies became my every waking moment. My life changed in those first few days. I changed. As if my soul had caught fire, I felt a burning in my chest, a driving purpose that eclipsed all else. My daughter would not die. Colt would not lose his sister. This would not break me or my family. Holding it together was my second priority, only to Maisie's survival. I didn't cry. Not when I wrote the letters to Ryan and to Chaos. Not when I told Colt and Maisie how sick she was. Not when she started vomiting after that first session of chemo. And not when a month later, during her second week-long session, her beautiful blonde hair fell out in clumps the day before her sixth birthday. I nearly lost it when Colt showed up from the barber with Larry, his head as shiny and bald as his sister's. But I just smiled. He'd refused to be separated during their birthday. And as much as I didn't want him to see what she went through during chemo, I was incredibly thankful to be with both of them. Not to be in a constant state of worry about one while I was caring for the other. I didn't break down. Not until New Year's Eve. That's when the uniforms came to the door and ripped my strong facade to shreds with a simple sentence. "We regret to inform you that your brother, SSG Ryan McKenzie, has been killed in action due to the nature of their unit." That was all I could know. The details, where he'd been, what had happened, who he'd been with, that was all classified. When there were no more letters from Chaos, I had at least one of those answers. They were both gone. I broke.
4 months later. Chapter 5. Beckett. Beck, if you're reading this, blah blah, you know the last letter drill. You made it, I didn't. Get off the guilt train, because I know you, and if there were any chance you could have saved me, you would have. If there were any way you could have changed the outcome, you would have. So whatever deep, dark hole of guilt you're wallowing in, stop. I need one thing from you. Get your ass to Telluride. I know your ETS date is right with mine. Take it. Ella's all alone. Not in the alone way that she has been, but really, truly alone. Our grandmother, our parents, and now me. It's too much to ask her to endure. It's not fair. But here's the kicker. Maisie is sick. She's only six, Beck, and my niece might die. So if I'm gone, that means I can't get home in January like we'd planned. I can't be there for her. I can't help Ella through this, or play soccer with my nephew, or hold my niece. But you can. So I'm begging you, as my best friend, go take care of my sister, my family. Do whatever you can to save my little Maisie. It's not fair to ask, I know that. It's against your nature to care, to not accomplish a mission and move on. But I need this. Maisie and Colt need it. Ella needs it. Needs you. Though she'll fight you tooth and nail before she ever admits it. Help her even when she swears she's fine. Don't make her go through it alone. I'll save you a seat on the other side, brother, but take your time. Take every single second you can. You are the only brother I would have wished for, and my very best friend. And just in case no one ever told you, you're worthy of love, of family, of home. So while you're searching for those things, please make sure Telluride is where you look. At least for a little while. Ryan. The mountains rose up above me, impossibly tall considering I was already at almost 9,000 feet. Sure, the air felt thinner, but it was also somehow easier to breathe. Havoc rested her head on the leather console between our seats as I drove my truck through downtown Telluride. It was Norman Rockwell perfect, bricked and painted storefronts, families strolling with children. Not quite the tourist haven I was expecting. Looked like a hometown was supposed to. It just wasn't my hometown. It was Ryan's. Mac was buried here. At least that was what I'd been told. They'd only sent back Captain Donahue and a couple other guys for the funeral. I'd been kept in the field with the rest of the unit, too valuable to be given leave. I knew the truth. It wasn't me, at least not with the state I was in. It was Havoc, they needed her, and she would only listen to me. I rubbed the top of her head, promising her silently that she'd have a peaceful life from now on, that as quickly as we'd both been given terminal leave, she deserved a little peace. Me? I lived in a hell of my own making, one that I more than deserved. I stopped to fill the tank before heading out of town, following my GPS to the address online for Solitude. Solitude, how fitting. Alone. I was alone. Ella was alone. And we'd remain that way because we'd never be together. I'd seen to that when I stopped riding the day Ryan died. But I could do this for Ryan, for Ella, but not for me. Thinking it was for me implied there was some kind of redemption that I was worthy of. There wasn't. What I'd done was beyond any redemption. My jaw flexed and my hands tightened on the wheel as I approached the private drive. I made the turn, my gaze catching the mailbox that hung at a haphazard angle on the post. How many times had she gone there looking for my letters? How many times had she found one and smiled? 24. How many times had she made the walk without one? Wondered what happened to me. Maybe she thought I'd died on the op with Ryan. Maybe it was better that way. I wasn't sure what I wanted to know. I drove up the asphalt drive under the budding aspen trees that lined the way. Ryan would have said there was something fitting about arriving in spring, during the period of rebirth, but that was a load of crap. There was no rebirth for me, no new beginning. I wasn't here to watch life begin. I was here to help Ella if it ended for Maisie, if Ella even let me near. The pit in my stomach was entirely too familiar, reducing me to that skinny, quiet kid I'd been 20 years ago, showing up at yet another family's house, hoping this one wouldn't find a reason to make him someone else's problem. Hoping this time he wouldn't pack his stuff in another garbage bag when he accidentally broke a dish or some rule he hadn't known existed, then be labeled troubled and shuffled to another, stricter home. At least this time I already knew what rules I'd broken and was more than aware that my time here was finite. I pulled up to the circular drive in front of the main house, which matched the pictures I'd seen online. It looked like a log cabin, except huge. The style was modernized rustic, if that was even a thing, and somehow it spoke to me, reminded me of a time when men harvested entire trees to build houses in the wilderness for their women, when they built things instead of destroyed them. My feet hit the ground and I paused, waiting for Havoc to jump down before shutting the door. I threw the signal for heel and she came right to my side. We climbed the small staircase that led to a wide porch, complete with rockers and a porch swing. The boxes that lined the porch railing were empty, cleaned out and ready for planting. This was it. I was about to meet Ella. What the hell was I going to say? Hey, I'm sorry I quit riding you, but let's face it, I break everything I touch and didn't want you to be next. I'm sorry Ryan died. I'm sorry it wasn't me. Your brother sent me to watch out for you, so if you could just pretend that you don't hate me, that would be great. I'm sorry I ghosted you. I'm sorry I couldn't bring myself to read any of your letters that came after he died. I'm so sorry for so many things that I can't even list them all. If I said any of that, if she knew who I really was, why I'd stopped writing, she'd never let me help her. I'd get a boot in the ass and sent on my way. She'd already admitted in her letters that she didn't give second chances to people who hurt her family, and I didn't blame her. It was a torturous irony that in order to fulfill Ryan's wish to help Ella, I'd have to do the one thing she hated. Lie. At least by omission. Just add it to the growing list of my sins. Are you thinking about going in, or are you just going to stand out here? I turned to see an older man in his 60s coming toward me. Those were some crazy eyebrows. He dusted off his hand on his jeans and reached for mine. We shook with a firm grip. This had to be Larry. You are a new arrival? I nodded. Beckett Gentry. Larry Fisher. I'm Solitude's groundskeeper. He dropped to his haunches in front of Havoc, but didn't touch her. And who might this be? This is Havoc. She's a retired military working dog. You her handler? He stood without petting her, and I immediately liked him. It was rare that people respected her personal space, or mine. I was. Now I think she's mine. His gaze narrowed a bit like he was searching for something in my face. After a prolonged silence, which felt like an inspection, he nodded. Okay, let's get you two settled in. A bell chimed lightly as we entered the pristine foyer. The interior was as warm as the exterior, the walls painted in soft hues that looked professionally designed to give it a modern farmhouse look. Yeah, I'd seen way too much HGTV in the last month, stupid waiting rooms.
Oh, you must be Mr. Gentry.
A chipper voice called from behind the long reception desk. The girl looked to be in her early 20s with a wide smile, brown eyes, and hair to match. High maintenance, but pretty. Haley.
How would you know that?
I took out my wallet, careful not to dislodge the letter in my back pocket. She blinked at me rapidly before dropping her eyes. Shit. I was going to have to work on softening my tone now that I was a civilian. Well, almost a civilian. Whatever.
You're our only check-in today.
She clicked through her computer. I'd be checking out if Ella realized who I was. Then I'd have to find another way to help without her filing stalking charges. Although I'm sure Ryan would have gotten a kick out of that one. He wouldn't be laughing if I couldn't help her.
Any preference for your cabin? We've got quite a few open now that the season is finally closed.
Whatever you have will be fine.
Are you sure? You're booked for... Wow, 7 months? Is that right?
She clicked quickly like she'd found a mistake.
That's right.
I'd never stayed in one place for 7 months in my life, but 7 months took me to the anniversary of Maisie's diagnosis, so it seemed prudent to book out a cabin. Wasn't like I was buying a house here or anything. She looked at me like I owed her an explanation. Well, this was awkward. So if I could get a map? I suggested.
Of course. I'm sorry. We've just never had a guest stay that long. It caught me off guard.
No problem.
Wouldn't it be cheaper to get an apartment?
She asked quietly.
Not that I'm implying you can't pay. Shit, Ella's going to kill me if I keep offending guests.
She mumbled that last part. I put my debit card on the counter in hopes that it would expedite the process.
Run the entire amount. I'll cover incidentals as I go. And yeah, it probably would.
That was as much of an explanation as she was going to get. A ridiculous transaction amount later, I put my wallet away and thanked my younger self for saving like a poor kid determined to never go hungry again. I wasn't poor anymore, or a kid, but I would never wonder where my next meal was coming from ever again.
Is that a dog?
An older woman asked, her tone soft but incredulous.
Yes, ma'am.
The woman seemed to be the same age as Larry, but the look of her had to be Ada. I had the weirdest feeling of stepping into a reality show that I'd only ever watched. I knew who each of them were from Ella's letters, but to them I was a complete stranger.
Well, we don't have dogs here.
Her gaze locked onto Havoc like she might immediately grow fleas and infest the place. Shit, if Havoc went, so did I. She goes where I go. My standard answer flew out of my mouth before I censored myself. Ada gave me a look I'm sure must have sent Ella running when she was younger. I gritted my teeth and tried again.
I wasn't aware of that policy when I made the reservation, my apologies.
He's paid up through November,
Haley said from behind the desk.
November?
Ada's mouth dropped open.
Don't worry, love.
Larry walked over to his wife and put his arm around her waist. She's a military working dog. She's not going to ruin the carpet or anything. Retired, I corrected him as Havoc sat perfectly still, reading the atmosphere.
Why was she retired? Is she aggressive? We have small children here, and we can't have anyone bitten.
Ada wrung her hands, actually twisted them. It was plain to see her conflict. I was paid through 7 months, most of which were in their off-season. I was guaranteed income. She retired because I did, and she wouldn't listen to anyone else. I'd been her handler for 6 years and couldn't imagine my life without her, so it worked out. She'll only bite on my command or in my defense. She's never peed on the carpet or attacked a child. That I can promise you. She wasn't a child killer in the room.
I was. She'll be fine, Ada.
Larry whispered something into her ear that made her peer a little closer, wrinkling the fine skin of her forehead. Then they had a wordless conversation full of raised eyebrows and head nods.
Okay, fine. But you're on your own for feeding her. Haley, put him in the Aspen cabin. That one is due for new carpet next year anyway. Welcome to solitude, Mr.
Gentry,
I supplied with a slight nod, remembering to force a quick smile that I hoped didn't look like a grimace. Beckett Gentry.
Well, Mr. Gentry, Breakfast is served between 7 a.m. and 9 a.m. Dinner can be arranged, but you're on your own for lunch. And so is Havoc. Havoc, she said, her face softening when Havoc tilted her head at the mention of her name. Well, okay then. Larry, why don't you show him to his cabin?
Larry whistled as we walked out. That was a close one.
Seemed like it, I agreed, opening the truck door. Havoc leaped inside in a single smooth motion.
Wow, she's got some jump in her.
You should see her take a wall. She's incredible.
A lab, huh? I thought all those dogs were shepherds and stuff. Lab seems too soft for that kind of work.
Oh, trust me, her bite is way sharper than her bark. A few minutes later, I drove the truck along the tight, paved road that wove through most of the property. The Aspen cabin was on the western side near the edge of a small lake. Havoc would be in heaven. Having studied the area, I knew there were acres between the cabins, the property designed to give visitors what the place was named for, solitude. Havoc and I climbed up the front porch steps, and I turned the key in the lock. No electronic cards here. It fit with the cabins, the mountains, the seclusion. Larry waved to me from his Jeep as the door swung open, and then he pulled away, leaving us to explore our temporary home. This is not a cabin, I told my girl as I stepped into a small foyer, complete with hardwood floors and one of those bench things where shoes were kept in baskets. To the left was a mudroom that was no doubt the hub of ski season, and on the right, a half-bathroom. The walls were painted in the same soft hues as the foyer of the main building, the floors dark and welcoming, the rugs clean and modern. The kitchen appeared on the right as I walked farther inside, a welcoming combination of light cabinets, dark granite, stainless steel appliances. At least we can cook, I told Havoc as I glanced over at the dining area that sat eight. Then I looked past the kitchen to the living room, and my jaw dropped. The living room was vaulted to the second story in a classic A-frame and ran the width of the cabin. Floor-to-ceiling windows brought in the afternoon light as it filtered through the trees and reflected on the lake. The mountains rose above, the snow marking the tree line at the peaks. If I'd ever imagined somewhere I could make a home, this might have been it. I'd never seen a more beautiful sight.
Knock, knock.
A sweet, feminine voice called out from the front door.
May I come in?
Sure, I called, walking to the center of the cabin where the hallway led straight to the door.
I'm so sorry, she said, shutting the door and coming into view.
My heart just about stopped. Ella. Scratch that. She was the most beautiful sight I'd ever seen. Her face was thinner than the pictures I had, the circles under her eyes a little darker, but she was exquisite. Her hair was piled on her head in some kind of knot, and she wore a blue Henley, the exact bright blue of her eyes, under a darker blue vest. Her jeans molded to her body perfectly, but it was easy to see that she'd lost weight since everything. She wasn't taking care of herself. Her smile didn't quite reach her eyes, and I realized she was still talking to me.
Hi, I'm Ella McKenzie, Solitude's owner. I heard Haley put you in this cabin, and we've had an issue with the stove that she'd forgotten about, so I wanted to offer you another cabin if you don't want the hassle of a repair team in here tomorrow.
An awkward moment passed before I realized that I needed to respond.
No, it's fine. I'll be out tomorrow most of the day anyway. They won't be in my way. Or I can look at it myself.
I wouldn't dream of you doing that.
She waved me off, looking around the cabin in a quick inspection.
Is everything else okay with your cabin?
Very. It's beautiful.
She nodded as she glanced toward the lake, not realizing my eyes were on her.
This one is my favorite.
Havoc shifted at my side, drawing Ella's attention.
And what do you think about the cabin?
She asked. Havoc tilted her head and studied Ella. First impressions were everything with her, and if she didn't like Ella right off the bat, there was little hope of recovering.
May I?
Ella asked, looking up at me. I nodded stupidly like I was a junior high boy locked in a room with a girl he crushed on. How the hell was I going to lie to her? Hide who I was? How had I gotten this far without a plan? She rubbed Havoc behind her ears and immediately won her over.
You don't mind her being here?
There was a miscommunication when I made the reservation. My voice was gruff, my throat tight with everything I wanted, needed to say to her. She'd kept me alive.
She'd given me gravity when everything went sideways. She'd opened the window to show me another life was possible. I'd destroyed her world and abandoned her, and she had zero clue. I was just a stranger to her.
Not at all. I hear she's a service dog?
One last rub, and Ella stood, coming up to just about my collarbone. I'd always been big, but something about how fragile she seemed made me feel huge, like I could put my body in front of the storm headed her way and protect her, even if the storm was of my own making. She's a retired military working dog.
Oh.
A dark look crossed her face before she blinked that fake smile back into place.
Well, as soon as my son figures out you have a dog, you might have a visitor. He's been after me to get one. But now, well, it's just not in the cards, or in my schedule, to train a puppy.
Colt. A jolt of anticipation raced through me at the thought of finally getting to meet him. They can be quite the handful, I said, running my hand over Havoc's neck.
Are you her handler?
Ella asked, studying my face. God, I could look into those eyes forever. How was Maisie? What treatment was she in now? Was the tumor shrinking? Was it almost operable? I was, and am. We served together, and now we're out together, on terminal leave, actually. It's not official for another 8 weeks. We're both working on the whole domestication thing, and I promise neither of us will pee on the carpet. The smile that flashed across her face was brief, but real. I wanted it back. Wanted to see it every day, every minute.
I'll keep that in mind. So she's trained in explosives, I'm guessing. Were you EOD?
Here it was, the moment that would define my entire purpose here. Her smile would fade, and I'd no doubt get a well-deserved hand across my face. She's trained in explosives and scenting people. She's only aggressive on command, and really loves anyone who will throw her favorite toy.
Explosives and people? That's rare, right?
Her forehead puckered like she was trying to remember something. For most dogs, yeah, but Havoc was a special operations dog, the best of the best. Ella's features flattened, and she stepped back, bumping into the raw wood support pillar that separated the dining area.
Special ops?
Yes, I nodded slowly, letting her put the pieces together.
And you just retired. You're really young to get out, knowing what adrenaline junkies you all are. You just quit?
She folded her arms under her breasts, her fingers rubbing her bicep in a nervous tell. My best friend died. My voice was barely a whisper, but she heard the truth of it. Her eyes flew impossibly wide, the blue even more startling against the sudden sheen of tears I saw gather there before she blinked them away. She glanced at the floor, and within a millisecond her spine straightened and she had walls up 12 feet high. She wasn't just guarded, she was shut down.
And that's why you're here.
I nodded again, like I'd turned into a bobblehead since she walked in.
Say it. I need you to say the words.
My call sign is chaos. I miss you and your letters so damn much. I crave your words more than oxygen. I'm so sorry about Ryan. I don't deserve to be here. He does. The options played through my head. Instead, I steered to the safest truth I could give her without ripping her to shreds or blowing the most important mission of my life. Ryan sent me.
I'm sorry?
Mac, Ryan. He sent me to watch over you. The way it came out, I could almost believe that I was here as the guardian angel, the one who would sweep in and save her from the shit I had no control over. I couldn't cure her little girl's cancer. I couldn't bring her brother back. In that regard, I was actually the demon. She shook her head and turned away, making a beeline for the front door. Ella?
Nope.
She waved me away, the second time since I'd met her, and reached for the door handle. Ella! Her hand paused on the handle, the other bracing against the door's trim. I know it's too much. I know I'm the last thing you expected, in every single way. If you don't believe me, I have the letter he left me. I reached into my back pocket, pulling out the envelope I'd folded and unfolded so many times that the creases were marked. She turned slowly, leaning back against the door. Her eyes were wary, her posture tense. She wasn't a deer in the headlights. She was a wounded, cornered mountain lion, all sleek lines and knowing eyes, ready to fight me to the death if I got too close. Here. I walked closer and offered her the letter.
She didn't even look at it. I don't want that. I don't want any part of it or you. I don't need a walking, talking reminder that he's gone. I'm not weak, and I don't need a babysitter.
I'm so sorry he's not here. My throat tightened, nearly closing on the emotions I kept on tight lockdown.
Me too.
She opened the door and left, and I raced after her like the idiot I was. I'm not going anywhere. You need anything, and it's yours. You need help, you've got it. She let loose a mocking laugh as she descended the steps.
I don't want or need you here, Mr.
She opened the door to her SUV and pulled out a paper.
Mr. Gentry.
Beckett, I answered, desperate to hear her say it, my real name.
Okay, Mr. Gentry, enjoy your vacation and then head home, because like I said, I'm not in need of a babysitter or anyone's charity. I've been taking care of myself since Ryan ran off and joined the army after our parents died.
I wanted to grab her, to hold her against my chest and block anything that wanted to harm her. My hands ached to sweep down the line of her back, to take away any of her suffering that she'd let me. I'd known this would be hard, but seeing her wasn't anything I could have prepared myself for. It doesn't matter if you want me because I'm not here on your wishes. I'm here on Max. This is all he asked of me, so unless you're going to kick me off your property, I'm going to keep the promise I made. Her eyes narrowed.
Okay. Anything I need?
Anything.
When Ryan died?
No, anything but this.
He was on an op, right?
Could she see the blood drain from my face? Because I sure as hell felt it. I heard the rotors, saw the blood, reached for his hand as it limply fell off the stretcher. Yes, it's classified. Her hand gripped the open doorframe.
So I've heard. I need...
She sighed, looking everywhere but at me for a second before straightening her shoulders and meeting my eyes.
I need to know what happened to Chaos. Was he there when Ryan died?
You were in the same unit, right?
Her throat moved as she swallowed, and her eyes took on a desperate plea. Damn it. She deserved to know everything, that I wasn't the man I wanted to be, that she needed. That I was the piece of shit who made it back with a beating heart while her brother came home draped in a flag. I needed her to know that I'd chosen to stop answering her letters because I knew that the only thing I could bring her in this life would be more pain. I needed her to know that it was only Ryan's letter that got me here, and the knowledge that it was the least I could do for my best friend. That I never meant to hurt her, never had the intention of smashing into her life like the wrecking ball I was. Not when she lived under such breakable glass.
Well, was he?
But what I needed didn't matter.
I've never been able to give second chances when it comes to hurting the people I love.
Letter number 6. If I told her those things, she'd shut me out and I would fail Mac for a second time. I could tell myself that it was her choice, but really, it would be mine. I was the guy people looked for an excuse to get rid of, and truth was a gift-wrapped reason to kick me to the curb. There were 2 distinct paths ahead of me. The first, where I told her who I was and what had happened, and she promptly walked out of my life. And the second, where I did everything I could to help her, no matter what the cost. Path number 2 it is. He was there, I answered honestly. Her lower lip trembled and she bit onto it, like any sign of weakness had to be quashed.
And? What happened?
That's classified. I was a bastard, but an honest one.
Classified. You're all the same, you know that? Loyal as anything to one another and nothing left for anyone else. Just tell me if he's dead. I deserve to know.
Knowing what happened to Mac, to Chaos, none of that would do you any good. It would hurt a hell of a lot more than it already does, trust me. She scoffed, shaking her head as she rubbed the bridge of her nose. When she looked back up, the fake smile was in place, and those blue eyes had gone glacial.
Welcome to Telluride, Mr. Gentry. I hope you enjoy your stay.
She climbed into the SUV and slammed the door, throwing the vehicle into reverse to get out of the drive. I watched until she disappeared into the thick forest of trees. Havoc brushed against my leg. I looked down at her, and she stared back up at me. No doubt knowing that I was an imbecile for what I had just let happen. Yeah, that didn't go so well. I looked up at the cloudless Colorado sky. We did a number on her, Mac, so if you've got any pointers on how to win over your sister, I'm all ears. I opened the tailgate of my truck and started to unload my stuff. It might be temporary, but I was here for as long as Ella would let me stay, because somewhere between letter number 1 and letter number 24, I'd fallen in love with her. Fallen for her words, her strength, her insight and kindness, her grace under impossible circumstances, her love for her children, and her determination to stand on her own. I could list 1,000 reasons that woman owned whatever heart I had, but none of them mattered because, even though she was the woman I loved, to her, I was just a stranger, an unwelcome one at that, which was more than I deserved.
Chapter 6. Ella.
Letter number 17. Ella. The pace is picking up here, which is half blessing, half curse. I'd rather be busy than bored, but busy comes with its own unique set of problems. We keep getting pushed back for redeployment, but hopefully we'll get the okay soon, and I'll be able to keep that date we set for a Telluride tour, if you'll still have me. Warning, I'm bringing your brother, and lately, he smells. At least the time is going faster, same as these letters. I find that I don't even wait to get one from you before I'm writing again. Maybe it's the simple act of putting pen to paper, of not seeing you react to what I'm writing that makes it so easy, almost effortless. You asked where I'd settle down if I ever wanted to quit being, what was it you called me, a nomad? I don't know, honestly. I've never found a place that called to me in any way that I could see as special. There were houses, apartments, barracks, cities, suburbs, and one farm. I've been around the world, but traveling with this crew means that I only see the parts of the world that hurt the most. I guess I want somewhere where I feel connected. Connected to the land, the people, the community. A place that sinks its hooks into me so deep that I have no choice but to let the roots grow. A place where the earth touches the sky in a way that makes me feel small without feeling insignificant or claustrophobic. Cities are out. Remember, I'm not a people person, so maybe a small town, but not so tiny that you can't get away from the mistakes you inevitably make. I'm a pro in the mistake category, and have learned that people generally find it easier to kick me out than forgive. As for the name thing, how about this? On the day I show up in Telluride to get the cult-approved tour, I'll tell you my full name. I've never hated an OPSEC policy as much as I do right now, but in a way it's a little fun. I'll be able to introduce myself to you, and in the meantime, you'll wonder if every stranger who comes to your door might be me. One day, it will be. And seriously, Christmas is in less than a month. Buy the kid a puppy, and hug Maisie for me. Let me know how chemo goes this month. Chaos.
Who the hell does he think he is? I snapped, as the door slammed shut behind me. Maybe I slammed it. Whatever. I let the anger flow through me, hoping it would overpower the grief welling up in my throat. Chaos had been with Ryan. A part of me had known already, seeing as his letters had stopped when Ryan died. But guessing and knowing felt incredibly different. I lost Ryan and Chaos, and had been handed Beckett Gentry like some kind of messed-up consolation prize with a hero complex. For God's sake, Ryan. You know I never needed saving. Who? Ada asked, popping her head out of the kitchen. I kicked off my muddy boots and headed toward Haley, whose eyebrows would have been in her hairline if she could have jacked them up any higher. Gentry! That is one giant bite of man candy, even with the one-word answers, Haley said, flipping another page in her Cosmo magazine. I snorted, half at her opinion and half at the fact that she still read Cosmo, that she was still in a phase of life where Cosmo held the secrets of the universe. I'd moved on to Good Housekeeping and Professional Women's Magazine, where there were no quizzes on how to tell if he was into you. I was 25 with 6-year-old twins, one of whom was in a fight for her life, and I owned my own business, which took up every spare minute of my time. No guy was into me. I tugged on Ryan's dog tag, the one that had come back with his things, moving it up and down the chain in nervous habit. What?
He is. Did you see that scruff of beard? Those arms.
Yes and yes.
What does that have to do with anything?
She looked over the pages of her magazine.
If I have to tell you that he looks like he's about to take Chris Pratt's role in the Marvel Universe, then you're way far gone, Ella.
Those eyes? Ugh.
She leaned back in the chair and stared dreamily at the ceiling.
And he's here until November.
November. That man was going to be on my property for the next 7 months.
He has that whole super strong, broody, secret pain kind of look. Makes a woman want to pull him close and...
Don't finish that sentence.
Oh, give the girl a break. That boy is something to look at.
Ada agreed, leaning against the reception desk. People skills could use some work, though.
That boy is special ops. I said it like the curse it was.
And how would you know that? Because of his dog? I still have my reservations about having a dog on property. But she seemed well-behaved, and labs can't be that aggressive, right?
Ada looked over the desk to see what Haley was reading.
One, labs can absolutely be that aggressive, hence why she's a special ops dog. Or was, whatever. He's her handler.
Don't be jumping to assumptions just because you feel a little awkward that there's an attractive single man within walking distance,
Ada warned, flipping the page of the magazine herself.
I'm not. How would you know he's single?
Had they already Facebook stalked him? Did guys like him have Facebook? Ryan never did. He said it was a liability.
No one checks in for 7 months with only their dog if they're not single.
Yeah, well, it doesn't matter. Ryan sent him. The magazine hit the desk in a flutter of pages as both women stared at me.
Ada was the first to react, sucking in a shaky breath.
Talk. I guess Ryan wrote one of those death letters and asked him to come to Telluride and watch over me.
Seriously.
Ryan's been dead 3 months, and he's still giving me his opinion on the men I should have in my life.
I forced a laugh and shoved the emotions back in the neat little box they belonged in.
The worst thing about going through so much in a short time? You can't afford to feel anything about anything. Or you end up feeling it all. And that's what got you into trouble.
You're sure? Haley asked.
I didn't read the letter or anything, but that's what he said. Given the way he looks, the dog, the way he moves. He'd assessed me from top to bottom within seconds, and it hadn't been sexual. I'd seen him categorize the details in his brain as clearly as if he'd actually had a computer open.
He moves like Ryan. His eyes scan like Ryan's.
Like my father's.
I cleared my throat. So hopefully, just like my father, he'll get bored and move on quickly.
That's what men did, right? They left. Ryan had been honest about his intentions, whereas Dad had lied through his teeth. Jeff had been no better, spinning pretty little stories to get what he wanted and running the minute he'd realized there were consequences. The lies had always been worse than the leaving. At least Gentry had been upfront and honest about the fact that Ryan sent him here. Honest bad choices I could handle. Lies were intentional inflicted pain for selfish reasons and unforgivable.
What are you going to do?
Haley leaned forward like she was front row to her own soap opera.
I'm going to ignore him. He'll leave soon enough once he feels like he's done his duty to Ryan, and I can shut that door on...
everything.
On chaos.
And in the meantime, I'm going to pick up Maisie from school because we're supposed to be in Montrose in 2 hours for her scans.
That's what matters right now. Not some Chris Pratt lookalike who has a huge guilt complex. I was almost back to my office. I needed Maisie's treatment binder.
when I heard Haley laughing.
So you did notice.
I said it didn't matter. I didn't say I was dead. Binder in hand, I raced back through the foyer, grateful we were empty this Monday with the exception of Mr. Gentry.
And those eyes, just like emeralds, right?
Seriously, Haley had reverted to junior high. Sure, I said with a nod, shoving my boots back on. Ada, will you grab Colt after school? Crap, he's got that cell art project due tomorrow, too. It needs another layer of paint on the edge. Can you?
Absolutely.
Don't worry. Go take care of our girl. Thank you. I hated this, leaving them with everything, walking out on yet another thing that Colt needed. But needs came in seasons, right? This was simply the season that Maisie needed me more. I just had to get her through this. And the next time Colt needed me, I'd be there. Checking the time on my phone and cursing, I raced down the porch steps, nearly missing the last one. I grabbed a hold of the wooden railing, my momentum sending me spinning around the base of the steps and straight into a very tall, very solid figure. One with massive arms that not only caught me, but also saved Maisie's binder and my phone from landing in the mud.
Whoa.
Beckett steadied me and then stepped back. I blinked up at him for a moment. The guy's reflexes were insane. He's special operations, moron. I'm late. What? Why the heck had those words come out instead of thank you, or something else that could even pass as social?
Apparently.
There was a slight turn to his lips, but I wouldn't call it a full-out smile, more like mild amusement. He handed over the binder and my phone, and I took them in what felt like the most awkward exchange in the history of awkwardness. Then again, the guy was literally saving me when I'd just said I didn't need saving. Was there something you needed? I hugged the binder to my chest. Maybe he'd taken my words to heart and was getting out of Telluride, or at least off my property.
I think there's a key I'm missing. The gate to the dock?
He shoved his hands into the pockets of his jeans. I guess that means you're not leaving.
Nope. Like I said, I made the promise to-
Ryan, I got it. Well, feel free to- I waved my arm out toward the wilderness, like the end of the sentence would magically appear through the aspens. Do whatever it is you're going to do.
Will do.
His mouth did that quasi-smile thing again, and there was a definite sparkle in his eyes. Not the response I was going for.
So, you're late?
Shit. I flipped my phone over. Yes, I have an appointment for my daughter, and I have to go, now.
Anything I can help with?
Holy crap, he looked sincere. I was torn between bewilderment that he'd really shown up here to ask questions just like that, and annoyed as hell that a stranger automatically assumed I couldn't handle my life. The fact that I really couldn't definitely wasn't on the table for consideration. Clearly, annoyance won out. No. Look, I'm sorry, but I don't have time for this. Ask Haley for the gate key. She's at
the front desk. No problem.
And he'd noticed who Haley was. Perfect. That's exactly what I needed, a lovesick receptionist who would inevitably get her heart broken when he left. I so don't have time for this, I muttered.
So you keep saying.
Beckett stepped to the side. Shaking my head at my own inability to stay focused, I walked past him, opened the door to my Tahoe, and tossed the binder onto the passenger seat. I started the engine, plugged my phone into the jack to charge, and then put the car into gear. Then I slammed the brakes. Being annoyed was one thing, being an all-out bitch, that was quite another. I rolled down the window as Beckett reached the front door. Mr. Gentry? He turned, and so did Havoc, who felt more like a shadow, more an extension of Beckett than a separate entity. Thank you for the steps. Catching me. The binder, phone, you know. Thanks.
You don't ever have to thank me.
His lips pressed in a firm line, and with an indefinable look and a nod, he disappeared into the main house. An emotion I couldn't name passed through me, racing along my nerve endings, like an electric shock, but warm. What was it? Maybe I'd simply lost the ability to define emotions when I'd turned them off a few months ago. Whatever it was, I didn't have time to focus on it. 10 minutes later, I pulled up in front of the elementary school and parked in the school bus only lane. Sue me, the buses weren't due for another 3 hours, and I needed every minute I had to get her to her appointment on time. I opened the doors to the school and scrawled my name on the clipboard at the window, signing Maisie out. Hey, Ella. Jennifer, the receptionist said, as she smacked her gum. She was a little older than I was, having graduated with Ryan's class. Maisie's back here. I'll buzz you through. The double doors buzzed, the universal sign of acceptance for entry, and I pushed through, finding Maisie sitting on a bench in the hallway with Colt next to her, and the principal, Mr. Halson, on her other side.
Miss Mackenzie?
He stood, adjusting his Easter print tie. Mr. Halson! I nodded, then turned my attention to my oldest by 3 minutes. Colton, what are you doing here? Going with you? He hopped off the bench and tugged at the straps of his Colorado Avalanche backpack. My heart crumpled a little more. Heck, the thing had been so battered over the last few months, I wasn't even sure what normal felt like anymore. Honey, you can't. Not today. Today was scan day. His face took on the stubborn set I was all too used to. I'm going. You're not, and I don't have time to argue, Colt. The twins shared a meaningful look, one that spoke volumes in a language I could never hope to speak or even interpret. It's okay, Maisie said, hopping off the bench and taking his hand. Besides, you don't want to miss fried chicken night. His eyes threw daggers straight at me, but they were nothing but soft for his sister. Okay, I'll save you the legs. They hugged, which had always seemed to me like two pieces of a puzzle fitting back together. They shared another one of those looks, and then Colt nodded like a tiny adult and stepped back. I knelt down to his level. Bud, I know you want to go. Just not today, okay? I don't want her to be alone. His voice was the softest whisper. She won't be, I promise. And we'll be back tonight and we'll fill you in. He didn't bother to agree or even say goodbye, just turned on his little heel and walked down the hall toward his classroom. I let out a sigh, knowing I'd have damage control to do later. But that was the problem. It was always later. Maisie slipped her little hand in mine. She couldn't even be promised now, which meant that as much as I hated it, Colt had to wait.
Miss Mackenzie.
Mr. Halson wiped invisible dirt off his thick-rimmed glasses. Mr. Halson, I was a kid in these halls when you first took over. Call me Ella.
Ella, I know you're on your way to yet another appointment.
Breathe in, breathe out. Do not snap at the principal.
But when you get back, we need to discuss Margaret's attendance. It's impacting the quality of her education, and we need to have a real discussion about it.
A discussion, I repeated, because if I said what was actually on my mind, it wouldn't reflect well on my kids.
Yes, a discussion.
On Maisie's attendance. Like I gave a crap about kindergarten attendance. She was fighting for her life, and the man wanted to discuss if she'd missed the day where they discussed the virtues of K being for kangaroo?
Yes. A discussion on Margaret's attendance.
For an educator, I would have thought he'd have another word. I looked down at Maisie, whose forehead puckered in her trademark whatever look that I recognized all too well, since it was mine. In sync, we looked back to Mr. Howson.
Yeah, we'll get right on that. After chemo and scans and nausea and vomiting and wiped out blood counts and everything else that came with a kid whose own body had turned against her. 2 hours later, we sat in the San Juan Cancer Center, me pacing at the end of the exam table while Maisie kicked her legs back and forth, battling whatever iPad app she'd chosen for the day. I was too keyed up to do anything but wear out the floor.
Please let it be working. My silent prayer went up with the million others I'd sent. We needed the tumor to shrink, to get small enough that they could attempt a surgery to take it out. I needed all these months of chemo to have been for something. But I also knew how dangerous the surgery would be. I glanced at my tiny daughter, her hot pink beanie with matching flowers standing out against the white walls. The panic that had been my constant companion these 5 months crept up my throat. The what-ifs and what-nows attacking like the sanity-stealing thieves they were. The surgery could kill her. The tumor certainly would kill her.
Mama, sit down. You're making me dizzy.
I took a seat next to her on the wide side of the exam table and placed a kiss on her cheek.
Well?
I asked as Dr. Hughes came in, flipping through something on Maisie's chart.
Hi, Doc,
Maisie said with an enthusiastic wave.
Nice to see you too, Ella.
She raised her eyebrow.
Hiya, Maisie.
Sorry. Hi, Dr. Hughes. My manners have run away screaming lately. I rubbed my hands over my face.
It's okay, she said, taking the spinning stool.
What do the scans say?
A soft smile played over her face. My breath caught, and my heart slammed to a stop, awaiting the words I'd been longing to hear, and yet was terrified of since this all began 5 months ago.
It's time. Chemo has shrunk the tumor enough to operate. My little girl's life was about to be out of my hands.
Chapter 7. Beckett.
Letter number 7. Chaos? I'm sitting in the hallway of the Children's Hospital of Colorado, with a notebook propped up on my knees. I would tell you what day it is, but I honestly can't remember. It's been a blur since they said cancer. Maisie has cancer. Maybe if I write it a few more times, it will feel real instead of this hazy nightmare that I can't seem to wake up from. Maisie has cancer. Yeah, still doesn't feel real. Maisie has cancer. For the first time since Jeff walked out, I feel like I'm not enough. Twins at 19? It wasn't easy, and yet it was as natural as breathing. He left, they were born, I became a mother, and it changed me in the very foundation of my soul. Colt and Maisie became my reason for everything. And even when I was overwhelmed, I knew that I could be enough for them if I gave them everything I had. So I did, and I was. I ignored the whispers, the suggestions that I give them up and go to college, everything, because I knew that there was no better place for my kids than with me. I might have a few issues, but I always knew that I was enough. But this? I don't know how to be enough for this. It's like the doctors are speaking a foreign language, throwing around letters and numbers like I'm supposed to understand. Labs and scans and treatment possibilities and the decisions. God, the decisions I have to make. I've never felt more alone in my life.
Maisie has cancer. And I don't know if I'm enough to get her through it. And she has to get through it. I can't imagine a world where my daughter isn't here. How can I be everything she's going to need and give Colt any sense of normalcy? And Colt? When the genetics came back, they told me Colt and I had to be tested for the gene mutation. He's okay, thank God. We both are, and neither of us carry it. But those moments waiting to hear if losing them both was a possibility? I could barely breathe at the thought. But I have to be enough, right? I don't have a choice. It's like the moment I saw those two heartbeats on the monitor. There was no option to fail. And there's no way I'm going to fail now, either. Maisie has cancer, and I'm all she has. So I guess it's down the rabbit hole I go. Ella.
I stepped onto the dock that reached into the small lake just behind my cabin, testing my weight. Yeah, this thing was going to need to be rebuilt. No wonder they'd kept the gate locked. The sun stretched overhead, cutting through the brisk morning. I'd been in Colorado for almost 2 weeks, and I'd learned the key to the weather here was layers, because it might be snowing in the morning, but it was almost 70 by dinner. Mother Nature had some serious mood swings around here. A light fog rolled off the lake, lingering around the shores of the small island that rested about 100 yards away in the center of the lake. I knew eventually I'd have to use the little rowboat that was tied up at the end of the dock and row myself over. Mac was buried there. It had nearly killed me when I wasn't allowed leave to come back and bury him, and yet there was an overwhelming relief that I wouldn't have to face Ella. To see her expression when she realized what I'd done, why I was alive and her brother wasn't. Havoc bounded over and shook the water from her coat and dropped the Kong at my feet, ready to take off into the water for the 20th time or so. She was restless, lying around all day these last couple of weeks, and I was too. I dropped down to my haunches, rubbing her behind her ears in her favorite spot. Okay, girl, what do you say we get you dried off and go find a job? Because I'm going stir crazy if we stay here much longer like a pair of dead weights. And honestly, I'm kind of expecting you to start talking back at any moment, so some human contact might be needed. It's okay that you talk to your dog. A small voice came from behind me. It doesn't make you crazy or anything. His tone suggested otherwise. I looked over my shoulder and saw a boy standing on the other side of the gate, dressed in jeans and a Broncos tee. His hair was shorn to the scalp, or rather had been, and was growing back in a slight sheen of blonde fuzz. His full eyebrows were drawn together over crystal blue eyes as he gave me a thorough once-over. Ella's eyes. This was Colt. I knew it in the very marrow of my bones. I did my best to soften my tone, well aware that I didn't know the first thing about talking to kids. I assumed not scaring him was a good place to start. I always talk to Havoc. She wagged her tail as if in answer. She's a dog. His words were at odds with the yearning in his voice and the way his eyes locked onto Havoc like she was the best thing he'd ever seen. I stood to face him, and he straightened his spine and stared me down. Kid didn't scare easily, which meant I had half a chance here. It's not when you talk to them that you have to worry about insanity, I told him. It's when they start answering you back. His lips puckered for a second, and he stepped forward, peeking over the half gate to look at Havoc. So, are you crazy?
Are you?
No, but you have one of our cabins for 6 months. No one does that, except crazy people. His expression flickered back and forth between judging me and coveting Havoc. He'd begged Ella for a dog and she'd nearly relented. Then Maisie's diagnosis came down, but I wasn't supposed to know that. Wasn't supposed to know that he wanted to play football, but Ella was too worried about concussions and pushed him towards soccer. I shouldn't have known that he was supposed to take snowboarding lessons this year, or that he'd shaved off all that hair on his birthday because his sister had lost hers. I wasn't supposed to know him, but I did. And it was hell to not be able to tell him that. Actually, I rented it for 7 months. You look a little short to be judging people. I crossed my arms. He mirrored my pose without hesitation. That makes you even crazier, and I don't let crazy people around my mama or my sister.
Ah, you're the man of the house.
I'm not a man, I'm six. but I'll be 7 soon.
I see.
I bite back a smile, well aware that he wouldn't be 7 for another 8 months, but time was all relative at that age.
Well, I'm not crazy. At least she doesn't think I'm crazy. I nodded toward Havoc.
How do you know? Because you said if she talks to you, that means you're nuts.
He stepped forward, resting his hands at the top of the gate, which came to about his collarbone. I needed to sand it down so he didn't get splinters.
Man, did he have some love-struck eyes for Havoc.
Do you want to see her?
He startled, his gaze flying to mine at the same time he stepped back.
I'm not supposed to talk to strangers, especially guests.
Which I totally respect. However, that didn't stop you from coming out here.
I glanced behind him, seeing the blue, kid-sized quad that was parked haphazardly behind my cabin. At least there was a helmet resting on the seat. I had a feeling that wouldn't save him from Ella.
No one's ever stayed this long, and never with a dog. Not unless they work here, or their family.
He gave a melodramatic sigh, and his head hung.
You wanted to see Havoc.
He nodded without looking up.
Do you know what she is?
I walked forward slowly, like he was a wild animal that I'd spook if I moved too fast. Once I reached the gate, I unlatched the metal closure, letting it swing open.
Ada says she's a job dog, but not like a special needs dog. There's a girl in my class who has one of those. He's cool, but we can't touch him.
His eyes slowly rose, his conflict so open and expressed in those eyes that my heart flopped over in my chest.
If you back up a little, I'll bring her to see you.
He swallowed and glanced from Havoc to me, and then nodded his head like he'd made his choice. Then he walked backward, giving us enough room to get off the dock and onto solid ground.
She's a working dog. She's a soldier.
He quirked an eyebrow at me, and then skeptically looked at Havoc.
I thought those had pointy ears.
My smile slipped free. Some do, but she's a lab. She's trained to sniff out people and other things. Plus, she plays a mean game of fetch.